Going Linux, episode 142, Computer America, number 39. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. This is my 39th appearance on the Computer America radio show, from June 21st, 2011.
Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show, the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, June 21st, 2011, and I'm your co-host, Ben.
And I'm your host, Craig Crossman. There you go. Well, I think you did a great job there, Ben. I really did. For a first time, yeah, I think you did a really good job introducing the show. I asked Ben to introduce the show tonight because I've got I caught something. I'm not sure what it is. It's bronchitis or something, and so my voice is certainly not 100%. And I figured, why not give him the opportunity to introduce the show and introduce the guests and kind of like sort of take over the show and see how he does. And I thought you did very well, you know, Ben. It's quite commendable. So
we're halfway through the first period, so.
Anyway, welcome into the Computer America show, and we've got a terrific show planned for you tonight, and I did see Green Lantern, and we had a great time seeing it. I still can't convince Ben to go see it, but I'm sure he will. But, well, maybe he won't. Who knows? Anyway, the point is, why don't you introduce our guest who's going to be with us here for both of us. Obviously, this is our All Linux show. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and as we know, we always dedicate the third Tuesday of the month to the topic of Linux as an important operating system. So why don't you introduce our guest, Ben?
Love to. Well, as we all know, the Linux operating system continues to become more and more popular. I mean, a month ago, I didn't even know still existed, and now I know better. But is Linux right for you? It's an important operating system, so on every third Tuesday of the month, today, we devote the entire show to Linux in order to answer questions like that. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to call in and join us. Joining us right now is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into the Computer America show.
Thanks, Ben. And you and I haven't really met, but didn't know it existed still? Come on!
You know, I heard about it back in the 90s, and I thought it just kind of,
eh. Oh, well, it's come a long way since the 90s.
Yeah, it sure has, I got to tell you. So what do you think? I think he did a pretty good job introducing you there. You know?
I think he sure did. Yeah, yep. you bet.
I think it's going to be a chip off the old block. I think.
My job is safe. This is a good thing.
There you go. And good to meet you, Ben.
That's
good
right.
To meet you too.
That's right. That's right. So, that's right. Larry, meet Ben. Ben, meet Larry. And we're going to talk about Linux tonight. Now, what we tend to do is we're going to open up the phone lines and take listener questions. But what we also do is I ask Larry to select a topic that we're going to talk about, an underlying theme. And tonight's topic is, has Adobe abandoned Linux? That's going to be the kind of thing, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Now, let's give out the phone numbers. Now, do you know the phone numbers yet, Ben, or I didn't give that to you, did I? So I'm going to have to do that. So here's what you do. You can pick up the phone, give us a call. It's toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. That number will get you on, and it will get you through. We have a special email inbox to set up when we're live and on the air. That is live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. And you can also join us in our live interactive add-on chat room from our homepage at computeramerica.com. On the left-hand side there, it says, you know, chat with us. Make up a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go in there. Click the login button beneath in your Java-enabled browser. Be on a Windows machine, Mac, Linux, Vista, Windows 7, Snow Leopard, they all work. We'll move you into the Computer America chat room. So that said, Let's get started. Has Adobe been? It's because no, Adobe has been on the show a couple of times. They were just on the show this last Thursday. We're talking about the software developer kit for Adobe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then this next Thursday, we're going to have Adobe, the Dreamweaver division is going to be on, talking about Dreamweaver. And so that's going to be fun. So Adobe's got a large presence here on the show. And why do you think, or why would you even say, has Adobe abandoned Linux?
Well, as a matter of fact, one of the listeners to the Going Linux podcast, Bradley, sent me a link to a blog article on, it's on Adobe's website, although the author of the blog article says that he doesn't really speak for Adobe. I think he's an Adobe employee and is speaking his own personal opinion. But he does cite some statistics and some things that Adobe has in fact announced. So maybe what we should do is kind of back up a little bit and talk about what Adobe does for Linux. Adobe is one of those proprietary software companies that makes things like the PDF reading software and PDF creating software. Sure. They produce Acrobat. The products that you were talking about, Dreamweaver and other things.
The Acrobat.
Acrobat, sure. Yes, uh-huh. Exactly. Uh-huh. And they have a number of different software programs for cross-platform applications, not the least of which is the Acrobat Reader, which is very, very popular everywhere. But one of the things that this article happens to mention is the fact that Adobe has decided to stop developing for the Linux platform. In fact, what they really say is they're going to focus their efforts going forward on phone applications like the iPhone and Android, citing a study that was done. And we'll have a link in the show notes to both the Adobe blog and to the research that they're citing here. But the research cites that the market share of Linux, market share growth is pretty flat for Linux, and it's expected to be in the future, whereas the Android has just taken off, as has the iPhone and the iOS.
So are we talking about the software developer kit for these mobile products by Adobe?
No, it's not really the software development kit. It's everything. Including the software development kit.
Okay.
So at least as far as my reading goes, they're talking about stopping further development. They're not saying that they're not going to make the software that they produce incompatible with Linux. They're not saying they're going to pull it off the market. What they're actually saying in the article is that Adobe, the company, is just going to stop doing any development for the Linux desktop operating system. And they're going to focus more of their effort on the phone applications. And the particular platform that has gotten the Linux community up in arms about this, not that they can do much about it, is the Adobe Air application. There are a lot of cross-platform applications that run on Adobe Air, which is a development platform that works in Windows, it works in Linux, and it works on the Mac as well. And so the same application can be written for the Air environment, and without the developer making any changes to that at all, the user just installs Air, Adobe Air, on their computer. There's a package available for Linux, a package available for Windows, a package available for Linux or Mac. Which one did I leave out? All three platforms.
Yeah.
And as long as that's installed, a developer can make their application available, one set of source code for any platform that's capable of running Air. And the fact that they are stopping support for Air, are stopping development of the Air application for Linux to focus in on these other applications, more growing applications, I understand it from a business perspective, means that if AIR becomes unavailable or out of date, or applications are written for later versions of AIR, and they're not compatible with the older versions of AIR, then Linux users will not be able to run those AIR applications that they have been running very successfully going forward. There's a wireframing program that I happen to use that wireframing is essentially producing a sketch diagram, I guess, of the user interface of a program that you want to develop without having to write the code. That runs on AIR, and I use it at work on Windows, and I use it at home on Linux. Well, if AIR goes away,
we're gonna have
it's not going to be available.
Yeah, that doesn't bode well. Hey, let's music means we can take a break, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show. It's all Linux tonight. Larry Bushy continues on with us. Stay with us.
And it's 21 minutes past the hour here on the Computer America Show. Sorry about that. I forgot that we had the Linux minute. But
the,
now
the Intel
we are...
the Intel minute, not the Linux.
Anyways, we are joined by Larry Bushy, who is our Linux expert. Mm-hmm. And before the break, we were talking about how Adobe had stopped developing some of its apps for the Linux platform, which is kind of surprising because... I was looking at the charts that you linked to me, and I put them up in the show notes already. You know, the rate of increase of both the Android and the iOS, it's not like they're skyrocketing and they're taking over the market by storm. You know, they're only going up, you know, maybe double, but they're still, the Android's under 1%, and the iOS is, you know, barely gone up a percent, I think. So.
Well, and the other thing that the article doesn't mention is that not only is Linux flat, but the Mac is flat and Windows is declining. So if the rationale is they're giving up a flat growth of Linux in order to focus their efforts on growing platforms, I understand that. And I guess I understand that they wouldn't abandon the declining Windows market.
Yeah,
because it's so big.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and if you abandon that, then what's left? You know.
Exactly. Right. So
you got to stick
with
Windows and Mac.
Yeah,
you got to stick with the Windows and the Mac at least. You know. So.
Yeah, and that's the rationale. It doesn't do anything for the Linux community though, but the Linux community to the rescue. As we've discussed before on the show, what happens when this sort of thing occurs is that the Linux community takes it up from there. And so I suspect that what will happen is as long as Adobe allows the Linux community to do additional development and support on the AIR packages for Linux, that the Linux community will take it over if there's enough folks using the AIR applications that there are enough people available to actually do that development work. Now, the big thing is, will Adobe hand that over? Their source code isn't open source, so it would be a little unprecedented for that to happen. Or maybe the Linux community will actually come up with an alternative for Adobe AIR that will either be compatible or incompatible and completely replace it in the Linux environment. So we'll have to wait and see, but in the meantime, those of us that are using AIR applications are getting a little nervous.
But it's crazy that they would, you know, try to take some of their resources away from this, because they're a big company. You know, it's not like they have to partition their resources just to get products out there. I mean, you know, they have a lot of departments working on a lot of projects at the same time. So I don't know, that it seems kind of crazy for me just for them to, you know, reallocate resources when they could just as easily keep doing both of them at the same time.
Yeah, and I think part of the rationale also includes some analysis that said that they really don't have very much uptake on their programs for Linux. And yeah, that may be true, but those of us who do use it, you know, it's a big loss to us, and we're going to have to find some other product to use. And it won't be Adobe, and we'll be less likely to use other Adobe products on Linux to begin with. And so although they do continue to support Acrobat Reader on Linux, you've got to view them with a little bit of suspicion. Are they going to pull the support for that as well? It's not like they're making a lot of money on the Acrobat Reader from any platform because they give it away for free.
Yeah, except that's just you're right. That's the reader. If you want to create PDFs with that's like a $695 program,
right?
You get quite costly. But that's only if you want. And of course, there are so many. Oh, how should I say? Because Adobe purposely made it an open standard. There are many other companies that offer alternatives to Acrobat to create your own PDF files, and for a fraction of the cost, like $90 or something, and
right.
they're full featured PDF creation programs. So, I guess Adobe kind of put themselves in that situation because they wanted to be an open format, open standard, and so, I guess that's – you can't have your cake and eat it too. It's one way
right.
or the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the risks you run in having open source software is the fact that because it's open source, other people can take your code and can use it on other things. Mm-hmm. And in this case, for Adobe, on the Linux platform, the creation of PDF files from any application is built into Linux, mm-hmm. and it's not from Adobe. It's built into the Linux operating system, and it's actually the reader there are some open source versions of the reader as well. There are even editors available for Linux, all of it for free, as is most of the software on Linux as well.
And but the Macintosh PDF creation and manipulation is built into Mac OS X. Also, anytime you say print, you can create a PDF file, save it to a PDF file. You have a lot, but now you can't do everything. That's why they make applications like Acrobat the other similar ones, because it can get quite extensive as to what you can do with it. But
sure. And in the $600-some-odd program, you can do things like insert bookmarks. You can, do a lot of things, quite frankly, that you just can't do with the free programs on Mac or Windows, or the inexpensive programs on those platforms, or the free programs, free applications on Linux either. So there are some limitations for sure, and. It's just sad that a big company like Adobe, who has been a supporter of Linux, would pull out like this.
Well, what do you think truly is at the heart of the matter? I mean, what do you think what's going on?
I really don't know, unless it's money. They're in the game for a profit.
It always boils down to money, I guess.
Yeah.
So where does that lead the Linux community?
Well, we'll just kind of hang in there with what Adobe continues to offer. And if it turns out that Adobe pulls out of this completely, then I expect one of two things will happen. Either the Linux community will pick up the charge from Adobe if they turn over the code, or we'll develop something alternative, just as good, but open source.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Hey, listen, we got to get on the break. Here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux tonight. We'll continue on with Larry Bushy right after this.
The Computer America Show, 35 minutes past the hour. We still have Larry Bushy from Linux, our Linux correspondent on, and we were talking about how Adobe is dropping Linux from their actively supported operating systems.
Well, have we confirmed that? Have we completely confirmed it, or is it still? I mean, is there complete evidence to this fact? Or are we still speculating, Larry?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to it. I mean, the blog post is from someone who I believe works at Adobe. It's on an Adobe.com site, and so it has the Adobe logo on it.
Yeah.
So I would expect that. Yeah, it's pretty credible.
But it's not official.
No, he's very careful to say that he's not speaking for Adobe in here. I don't know how you can be on an Adobe site with an Adobe logo and as an Adobe employee and not be speaking for the company.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? That's right. So, yeah, regardless of that, whether it's official or not, it appears that's the direction they're going in, and it makes the Linux community nervous, as I said.
Wow. All right. Well, why don't you continue on, because so basically it's not official, so...
Well, it might be something you could ask Adobe next time they're on, if it is the development folks that you're talking about, because is a development environment, right?
It's too late because they were on the previous show. The one's coming up is the Dreamweaver, the Dreamweaver show. But Brian Hughes, who is the senior product manager for a Photoshop at Adobe, and he was talking about the SDK for Photoshop, where you could access it from, you know, they had three different products that they came out with. You know, Adobe Easel, Adobe Color Lava, and Adobe Nav. So you could do all these things with Adobe running on your computer. You could navigate, control, and take information from the computer onto your portable device and then send it back. But you know, and I think that was regardless of what version, as long as you could access it with the iPhone, I don't think it really mattered if it was Photoshop running on the Windows, Mac, or Linux platform. I think it worked with all platforms at this time.
Well, there is no Photoshop for Linux, and that's one of the things that many Linux users would like to see, is a Photoshop for Linux. Of course, there's the GIMP, which is an image editing software that's very similar to Adobe, but for those folks who are used to using Adobe on the Mac and on Windows, when they switch over to Linux, they find the GIMP, it's just enough that they're a little uncomfortable with it until they get used to it. And so they would love to see Adobe port something like that over to Linux, but they haven't. And with this latest move, we're beginning to wonder if that will ever occur. Linux users would be willing to purchase the Adobe Photoshop software on Linux if it were made available.
Yeah. By the way, I told Ben to click on one of the links, and evidently you have to grant him permission. You never granted him permission. He can't access the emails that you have. There's two links. It says you need permission to access this item. You're signing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. I can certainly do that.
his email address. Matter of fact, I'll just send you his email address, and
perfect.
Then you can give Ben access, because right now he can't get on.
Okay. Well, we'll fix that so that we can get into the emails in the second hour.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're going to do all of that. We're going to get that going on. So, in the meantime, where do we stand at this point?
Ben, were you going to say something?
Yeah. I was reading the article again, and it said that while there are a lot of Linux devices out there, most of them can run Android, or I don't know if it said the iOS, but a lot of them run Android. So, like, is it common practice for, say, if Linux doesn't have something, then you can get, I don't know if it's an emulator, to run the program, and then, you know, just do what you can in Linux, and then just kind of use the other operating system to get what you need? Or is this just something that everyone's migrating to Android from Linux?
No, Android is Linux. But it's a Linux that runs on the phone platform and the tablet platform. Many of the tablets that are coming out that are not iPads are running Linux, and as a result, it is Linux under the hood, but it's not the same Linux that you would use on a desktop. So you could run an emulator, which would generally be an Android development kit, software development kit, that you would be able to run on Linux. But that's not the way that folks want to be able to run software applications. So, although, you know, they do make the point in the article, in the blog post, that by making their products, by Adobe making their products available to on the Android platform, they are indeed supporting Linux. It's not the Linux desktop that they're supporting. So as a result, it's very different.
Oh, yeah, that's where I got mixed up. I had, for some reason, I thought Android was neither Linux, Windows, or Apple, but okay, that makes sense now.
Yeah, the good folks at Google have developed Android based on the Linux platform, on the Linux kernel, and I know that in the early phases of development, they were consulting with Canonical, that's the company behind the Ubuntu distribution of Linux, and so they worked quite well together, and in fact, from what I understand from reading the various blogs that I subscribe to and news articles and so on, Google has in fact, when they provide their employees with a computer now, they have a choice of operating system, Mac or Linux. That's it. No Windows. So, and I'm sure they also offer Chrome these days, since that again is a Linux based version of an operating system that runs on a computer that is essentially the Chrome browser running on a Linux kernel and everything running from the web essentially.
That's great. Apparently, I am a secret Linux fan because I love the Android. I love Chrome. I'm flabbergasted.
Well, I guess you are a secret Linux fan. And, you know, you ask anyone, and I think somewhere, I don't know if it's in this blog post or a follow-on blog post or one of the comments, I think this particular author of this article, Dave McAllister, had mentioned that if you ask folks if they would consider running Linux, and you might hear, well, what is Linux? Or you might hear, no, it's too difficult for me. But if you ask those same people that answered that way, would you run Android on your phone? They say, oh, absolutely. I have an Android phone and I love it. Or, you know, I've heard about Android. So most people don't know that Android is Linux. And it is. It's Linux just like Linux is based on Unix and Mac is based on Unix. It's all from the same root, our original operating system.
There you go. So Ben, you think you're a secret Linux admirer and you didn't even know it.
You know, Chrome is just so simple and clean, and it really appeals to me. And Android, has a lot of the same qualities. I just didn't know they were Linux.
Well, now you know.
There you go.
That's great.
So, do you use Firefox at all, Ben? I'm just kind of curious.
I think a while back they had like some kind of security defect or there was a glitch, and they didn't have an update for it for about a week. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I uninstalled Firefox and installed Chrome, and I've just been using Chrome ever since.
Okay, and you don't use Safari either?
Is that Mac thing?
It's an Apple. No. It's an Apple product. Yeah, it is. But
are you two related at all?
No, evidently not. But the thing is, Firefox. I use Firefox. I don't use Safari that much. I use Safari when I use it on my iPhone, of course, because it's one of the only browsers that's out there. There are other browsers, but Safari seems to be the best one for the iPhone. I do use Firefox as my main browser. I haven't used Chrome in a while. I should probably take another look at it. I do have it in my arsenal. I just haven't fired it up at all because Firefox has just been doing so well for me here. They have a Linux version of Firefox, do they not?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, that's the browser that's on most Linux distributions by default. Certainly, depending on the desktop environment that you use, there are other browsers available. But most distributions package up Firefox because it's very popular. Mm-hmm. It is open source. It is free of charge. And those are kind of the criteria for getting your software application in Linux.
Yeah, it is. All right, listen, we're going to take another break, and then we'll continue on. Of course, we've got emails coming up in hour two. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK. 866-606-8255, our toll-free number. We will be right back with more right after this. You know, Larry, this was Ben's idea, starting up a Computer America Facebook page. It's only been up for about a week and a half. No, about 2 weeks now, exactly.
Ah, I think that's great.
Yeah, that's doing really, really well. We're getting a lot of people hitting onto it and liking the page, and we're giving away some really good stuff. So then
the new guy does good.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
It's either that or I don't get paid or fed. So.
There's that.
Yeah, exactly.
Going on with Linux, the whole thing, apparently I'm a secret Linux fan. And, right before the show, I was talking with my brother about what we're going to be talking about. And he said that he's tried Linux, but he said it was a little bit too hands-on for him. Like, he liked it, but he found that Windows was just, a better fit. It was more, as you call it, portable, I guess. That means, you could just install it and it was ready to go. Would you suggest someone going to Linux, if they have – I personally don't have much in the way of computer knowledge other than, some of the basic stuff to get by. Like, would you recommend someone like me to go to Linux?
Well, it's not for everybody, and I would recommend that you try it. And the one that I'm recommending now that – folks switching from Windows or even from the Mac to try is Linux Mint. And I would try Linux Mint 11, which is – they have different versions of Linux Mint based on different things. Linux Mint 11 is their classic version, if you will, that has been around forever. The 11 is their 11th release. Well, I'm not sure that's absolutely true, but it's the release number is 11. They may have had more releases or fewer releases than that. But it is definitely designed for someone moving over from another operating system. Many versions or distributions of Linux are designed for the computer hobbyist or the enthusiast. Yeah. And so they're designed for people who like to tinker. But Linux Mint is specifically designed for people who are new to computers, new to Linux, maybe switching from another operating system. And so it's designed to just work. It's got a very attractive interface. It's easy to pick up and learn. If you're coming from Windows, it's got the familiar menu in the lower left corner that you click on. It's labeled menu. It's not labeled the start button because, of course, you use it to access your menu and to shut down and to label something. Start that you use to shut down is just counterintuitive to me. So anyway, it's a very familiar user interface to people moving over from Windows, and that is done intentionally. Many Linux distributions don't include out-of-the-box support for things like MP3 or other things that might use proprietary or non-free as in freedom. We've talked about that before on the show, and as a non-Linux user from the past, you may not be aware of what that is. But without going into all that at this point, many distributions don't include specific software if it's patent encumbered or that kind of thing. And MP3 and playback of MP3 is one such thing, as is playback of DVDs. But Linux Mint, it includes all of that out of the box, so it just works regardless.
I pulled it up. Looking at the screenshots, it's really nice. Like, and it looks kind of like Windows, but again, it's probably not Windows. But what's the real appeal of, say, something that's not as user friendly as Mint? Just like another Linux operating system. Why would I want something that isn't as intuitive to the average user?
Well, you'll find Mint and many Linux distributions are very, very intuitive. Linux from the 90s wasn't, and it was – well, it's developed by its users, and its users happen to be computer enthusiasts and programmers and developers and coders. And those folks, they want stuff they can tinker with. And so back in the 90s, that's what it was. But as its popularity has grown, the user base has become more and more average computer users. And as a result, the Linux distributions have geared themselves for those average users. So, I would just give it a try. And in fact, while you're on the Linux Mint page there, if you go to downloads, you can download an ISO image that is a live CD. You don't copy that to a CD. You burn an burn that image to a CD. There are instructions there on the site, mm-hmm. and that will give you a bootable CD that will run Linux Mint from the CD without ever installing it on your computer. You can use the entire operating system from the CD and give it a try. And if you decide to install it, you can install it alongside of Windows, so you can dual boot, or you can choose to wipe out your Windows operating system if you get really brave, or you've got a spare computer you can hook it up on.
That was going to be one of my questions, because, you know, I would love to try something like this, but I'm not brave enough to wipe my Windows off my computer and jump headfirst into this.
Yeah, I would encourage you not to install it right at first. Give it a try from the live CD. You can use all of the features. You can even install applications on the running system running from the CD. Now, of course, when you reboot, those will all be gone because it's running in.
Yeah.
Try all of it and get a good experience. Give it a try, and you know, if you like it, great. If you don't, nothing lost, except you burned a CD. And how many of those have I got sitting on my desk as coasters?
Exactly. Hey, listen, the first hour just flew on by, and we're going to continue on in hour two with some emails that we received from Larry, and we're going to address them and read them to you and continue on in the subject of Linux. It's all about Linux tonight. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We'll be right back after your local and national news. Stay tuned for more Computer America. Hello, and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on with our All Linux Show, the third Tuesday of the month. It's all about Linux. Larry Bushy is the our guest for this hour, and continues on to be our guest. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And Larry, in this hour, we're going to go to some email that you have received in the past month that you felt was relevant to people who listen to our show, and why don't we get started with those?
Sure. Okay, well, our first email is from Bill from Vermont. He wrote to ask us about the status of Netflix on Linux.
Oh, Netflix, of course, is this really great service that allows you to basically get movies delivered to your whatever device it might be, your TV or your computer, and they charge like about $9 a month for unlimited access at Netflix,
and something like that. Yeah,
exactly. And so I was not aware of the fact that it wasn't available for Linux at this time.
No, it's not. And well, I shouldn't say that. If you have a television set or a Blu-ray player that gives you subscription to Linux, and many of them do, mm-hmm. Gives you a subscription to Netflix.
Okay.
That's kind of like that Intel Digital Minute thing. those Blu-ray players and those television sets, generally speaking, are running Linux as the operating system that runs those devices at the kernel. So, yes, it runs on Linux, but not on the Linux desktop. So I think that's intentional on their part. And it may also be that, okay, running it on a television is a little different than running it on a computer screen. So let's get into Bill's email, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. We had actually talked about this on the Going Linux podcast, and Bill's responding to that. He says, I just listened to your Computer America show 135 about using Linux to fix PCs. My 15 minutes of fame. I was a little kid when you read my name on the show as a listener who sent the link, and I was thrilled even more to hear how a good show it made. Always happy to help the Going Linux effort. Speaking of computer fixes, I wanted to put Ubuntu, which is a distribution of Linux, on my daughter's Acer laptop after she got a nasty XP infection. Using my trusty USB stick with UNet Bootin, mm-hmm. I was able – UNet Bootin, just to give some definition here, is – a program that allows you to take that live CD we were talking about in the first hour with Ben and put it onto a USB stick and allows you run it from there.
Very nice.
And
it was very nice. Yeah, to be able to
do
that.
Good. Yeah. Okay. And so continuing on with the email, he says, I was able to recover her My Documents folder, and she almost took the Linux bait, but then claimed that Netflix doesn't work in Linux, at least in Ubuntu. Is this true? I never tried it. Maybe there is a listener who has a workaround. Call me old-fashioned, but I prefer a TV screen for movies using a DVD player. I am also now happy subscriber to Allison's NoSilicast. That's Allison Sheridan. She hosts a Mac a biased podcast, and I was interviewed on there. Thanks to your recent Audacity show, gee, with so much good stuff out there, I need to find a podcast on time management. Yards, Bill. So a lot of good information in that one email. Back to the Netflix, though. Yeah, Netflix isn't available for Linux, any distribution of Linux at this point. You might be able to get it running with some sort of workaround, but I haven't heard of any that that actually works. And if anybody in the chat room knows, go ahead and let us know, but I don't think so. The Netflix folks are said to be working on a client for the Linux operating system, so we're hoping that that will be available at some point. There are media center based or media center distributions of Linux that do everything that you would expect of a media center except for running Netflix. So even those distributions that will turn your computer into a PVR, they still don't run Netflix. So we kind of have to wait for that to happen or go buy a Roku box or Slingbox or something like that. That'll work.
There you go. So, good advice for Bill. For Bill, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
All right. Let's go to the
next
one.
So, going on with the next email. Curtis is the author of the next email, and he provides us some comments on Ubuntu's radical redesigned interface called Unity. And we talked about that on a recent Computer America show, that Ubuntu had redesigned their interface and called it Unity. Curtis writes, just finished listening to episode 140, where you discussed Ubuntu 11.04. I found it interesting to see your conclusion was much like mine. The new version of Ubuntu is not the way to go, at least not at this time. I was surprised to discover that after the install was completed, my old IBM ThinkPad would not run the Unity interface. Instead, Ubuntu automatically installed some other optional desktop. I think it was GNOME. And just as an aside for a moment, yeah, it's designed to automatically use the GNOME interface if Unity won't run because your hardware is so old it won't be supported. So that's kind of a fail-back solution that Ubuntu has provided. Continuing on with the email. On top of that, I found the performance was slow, much like running Windows, and that was a surprise, as for years Linux has been promoted as a replacement for Windows for an older computer. Since I was determined to finally move over from Windows, having been trying Linux since Ubuntu 6.06, but never staying with it, I searched DistroWatch, and another definition for new listeners, DistroWatch is a website, distrowatch.com, that lists Linux distributions and their popularity and gives you a lot of information about what's included in those particular distributions. So he searched DistroWatch for something like Ubuntu that was easier on an older machine. Lubuntu, L-U-B-U-N-T-U, sounded like it might meet my needs, so I downloaded and installed it. Everything worked, except my codec printer. However, I found a driver for it on SourceForge, and I'm pleased to find that I can do everything I want on Linux. Look forward to many more episodes of Going Linux, Curtis. And he provides specs on his old IBM ThinkPad. He says it's a Centrino Mobile 1.6 gigahertz processor with 1 gigabyte of memory and a 60 gigabyte hard drive that's a 72 RPM drive.
So he was able to get that codec memory, huh, after all.
Yes. And the driver from Kodak as well.
Exactly. So everything worked. That sounds to me like a win-win situation.
Yeah, that's definitely a success story, and that's kind of typical of a Linux situation where if one particular distribution doesn't work on your hardware or it's just not for you, the way Ubuntu has been redesigned and it just isn't to your liking, There are many, many more that you can choose from. And unlike Windows, there isn't just one desktop environment. So even if he had stuck with Ubuntu, he could have switched to another desktop environment. In fact, he installed a new version of Ubuntu, that Lubuntu that we talked about there, which runs the LXDE user desktop environment, rather. Mm-hmm. And that's yet another desktop environment besides GNOME and Unity that Ubuntu runs, not out of the box, but you can install it optionally. Or you can just download the Lubuntu distribution that has it installed out of the box.
So a big success to Curtis. So he's got it all running, and with the older equipment, as Linux, I think, has a good reputation for supporting legacy hardware, and here's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, exactly right. And what you'll find is, as Curtis did, Linux runs actually faster on that old hardware than the originally installed Windows operating system, and especially if you try to run a more modern version of Windows on older hardware, it just slows to a crawl. But even modern Ubuntu will run quicker on older hardware.
Well, there you go. Okay, another good reason for running Linux. A lot of people use Linux for their legacy hardware because it's the only thing that will run on their legacy hardware and keep them current. Hey, we're going to break. We'll continue on with more. This is the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us right after these words. Twenty-one minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with Ben and myself. It's an All Linux show, and we're reading emails that you've sent in over the past month, and we just finished with Curtis, and with his situation, it was a win-win situation. He got Linux working with his legacy equipment, and as I pointed out, sometimes only Linux can work in legacy equipment.
Exactly right.
Let's go to Rich. Okay, next one.
Okay, Rich provides us with additional feedback on that Unity interface from Ubuntu and provides some alternatives, kind of springboard from the last one. So Rich writes, got a kick hearing you read my email on Going Linux podcast episode 140. If you are still on Zubuntu, he's talking to me here because I switched to Zubuntu for a while, which is X-U-B-U-N-T-U, another distribution variant from the Ubuntu folks. If you're still on Ubuntu 11.04, I found a couple of YouTube videos that have helped me with the XFCE Zubuntu. XFCE is the desktop environment in the Zubuntu distribution. That's the X in Zubuntu. And I have listed the links below. Well, we'll include those links in the show notes. On my beater box, a multi-boot between Unity 2D, card won't handle 3D, Zubuntu 11.04, and Mint 11. That way I can experiment without messing up my production box running 10.04. That's Ubuntu version or release 10.04. Mm-hmm. I like both Zubuntu and Mint and am getting less concerned if Canonical, who is the company behind Ubuntu and its variants, can't get Unity together. Though I think Shuttleworth's smart remarks indicate he is aware Unity isn't going to work for more experienced users, Rich. And another aside to explain who Shuttleworth is, Mark Shuttleworth is the original founder of the Canonical company that is the financial backer behind the Ubuntu desktop or the Ubuntu Linux distribution. And he was a .com millionaire who spent part of his money as the first non-Russian cosmonaut in space, yeah. And then spend the rest of it, well, he's still got lots left over, I guess, spent another bundle forming Canonical and giving the Ubuntu distribution to the Linux community for free, and committed that it would always be given away for free. And so that's why it gained so much popularity so quickly.
Yeah, well, good. Well,
we're getting a history lesson as we talk about these emails.
All right, well, let's continue on. Let's go with Jared has written an interesting telling us how he's gone Linux, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So Ben, you'll be interested in this. This is somebody who has actually gone Linux and done it very successfully and happily. So Jared, I wanted to pass along both a tip and a gone Linux story. First, the tip. I assume you and many listeners are like me and often boot into live CDs or bootable USBs, unlike Ben, who's never tried it before. I hate hunting for the keys to access the boot order on my PC, so when I do discover which key it is, I use a silver Sharpie and put a small dot on the appropriate key on the netbook or notebook keyboard. For desktops, I pull down the CD-DVD bay door and write the key on the inside, since the keyboard may be put to use elsewhere. So just again an aside, what he's talking about here is when you boot to a live CD, uh-huh. Of course you need to boot from the CD, or you boot to a USB stick. On a Windows PC, there is usually some sort of function and then a key that allows you to either change the boot order of your computer, whether it boots to the hard drive first or to the CD first, or sometimes it just gives you the list of what the bootable devices are. And so that's what he's talking about, using a silver Sharpie to mark that on either the keyboard on a laptop or rather the key itself on the laptop or the CD-DVD bay door. So that's what he's talking about there.
Okay.
Now, about gone Linux, my sister-in-law was using an older laptop with XP on it that was acting up. I managed to save it a couple of times, but the hard drive was on its last legs and finally gave out. I gave her an old laptop with Linux Mint on it, and installed Skype and gave her maybe 5 minutes of tutorial on how to use it. I had to help her with it, with her Wi-Fi connection only once. It was the router that was acting up. But aside from that, I haven't had to field a single request for help until when she was using Windows. Mm-hmm. I asked her if she wanted me to replace the hard drive on her laptop so she could have hers back, but she was not interested in giving up the laptop I had given her. Can't say I blame her. This is what I would consider an extremely lightweight computer user, in terms of knowledge, but this certainly hasn't prevented her from enjoying Linux. Looking forward to your next podcast, Jared.
There you go.
So what do you think, Ben? You ready to try it yet?
You know, like, before you said I would need to boot it from a CD, and I don't have any blank CDs laying around, but I do have a gazillion USB drives, you know, just hanging around, so I could try it. And with the question that you answered in the chat room about the whole gaming thing where you can actually run it through Linux with certain programs, I might seriously consider trying Linux, but one question though, what is really the pros of using Linux as compared to Windows? Like, is it faster, more responsive, or what? Yeah.
Yeah. On given hardware, typically it is faster and more responsive, especially if you've had Windows installed on your computer for a while. As you may have noticed, Windows tends to slow down after a time of being installed on your computer. That's just kind of a natural progression of how Windows has been written. Now, when you install Linux, it doesn't have that same issue with slowing down. And so it does run a little bit faster. Now, to run Windows games on a Linux machine, though, you have to run it in an emulator of sorts, and there may be some performance that you take from there. So you may want to try it out again before you actually use it for real, and running it from a USB stick isn't going to give you the maximum speed. So you probably want to install it on a computer that you can install it on a hard drive, or get a spare hard drive and install it on there to get the full experience. But yeah, so the advantages really of Linux overall, aside from gaming, are the fact that you can try various versions of Linux very easily and install them. They install in maybe half an hour, as opposed to if you've ever tried installing Windows from scratch, it can take upwards of a couple of hours, because every time you install something new, you have to reboot. And, of course, there are all those updates. And after all the updates, you know, from installing from the CD, you've got to do the updates and reboot between each one. Yep. When you install software on Linux, no rebooting. You can use it right away.
That's great. This week. I'll tell you what, we're going to take on the break, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's our all-Linux show tonight. We'll continue on with more Linux right after this.
Hello and welcome back to the Computer America Show. It is 35 minutes past the hour, and we are right in the middle of our Linux show, which is the third Tuesday of every month. And before we jump into 305 Tech's questions that he asked in our chat room, I just had a few more questions about running Linux on my computer. I was wondering, I'm not that tech savvy, but is it possible to create a partition on my hard drive so I could, you know, install Linux on one partition and then just keep Windows on the other?
Yeah, exactly. You can do that from the live CD. So if let's say you were going to give Linux Mint 11 a try. So once you have the CD booted, or from the USB stick, you have booted it and you're running it from the stick or from the CD, there will be an icon on the Linux desktop in that live session that says install. And when you get to the installer, it will give you the choice of wiping out your hard drive, so use the entire disk is, I think, the option that it gives you. And then another option there is to use Linux Mint alongside of your existing operating system. And what Linux will do is it will take care of doing the partitioning as it's installing. So it will give you the choice of how big that partition should be. So if you want to give a third or even a half of your hard drive to Linux, you could do that. And there are some minimum requirements, and it's typically not going to let you choose a partition size that's too small to install it. And then once you start the installer, it will take you through the process of, you know, identifying your name and what time zone you're in. And then it pretty much takes over from there. It creates the partition. It does the installation. It puts a bootloader onto your hard drive that allows you to boot into either Windows or into Linux. And then from then on, after it's installed, about half an hour later, you have the entire Linux distribution and a whole lot of applications already pre-installed, like the entire Office suite, a chat client, of course, a browser, and a whole lot of other software already pre-installed, because it all comes free on the Linux operating system. And at that point, the only thing you need to do then is reboot your computer, choose one of the other operating systems to run, and for your first time, just with as with any other operating system, the first time you log in, it'll ask you, do you want to apply the updates? I'd certainly encourage you to do that, especially if there are security updates. And once you've done that, maybe 5 minutes later, you're running the entire Linux operating system right away, and you can choose which one you want from the boot screen when you boot up.
You know, I was talking to Craig in the chat room, and I asked for help because you are, in one show, you are converting me to a Linux user. And, you know, you're making this really easy for me to do, which is just terrible. I was hoping it was going to be super complicated. but you know, I'll definitely give that a try. But you want to move on to 305 Tech's questions?
Sure, why not? In the chat room, we have 305 Tech has got a couple of questions for you, Larry. So, well, Ben, why don't you read them to him?
Love to. Okay. 305 Tech says, Larry, have you used ClearOS? Do you know of any other distros, which I think means distributors.
Distributions
like ClearOS. And do you think it makes a good alternative for a small business of 5 employees over MSFT small business server?
Right. MSFT being Microsoft.
And if you put an L in front of it, that's LSMFT, Lucky Strike Tobacco. That's another story.
Yes. No, I haven't tried ClearOS, although I've been doing a little bit of reading about it and hearing a little bit about it as well. ClearOS is a new distribution. Well, it's actually not new. It's a new name for a distribution that has been taken over and renamed and revitalized. I would venture to guess that they've probably done a little bit of cleaning up of the code as well and taking it in a new direction. It's specifically designed as a server, a small business server. And according to Inet Ken in the chat room, who has a little more knowledge about ClearOS, he says that it gives you the basics for your server, but you need to pay for some other features as you go along. Hmm. And so Inet Ken actually provides some alternatives. Zential, Zentyal, another distribution that I haven't heard of or tried. But then again, I'm not really a server kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But if you want to find out more about them, if you go to distrowatch.com, DISTROWATCH.com, and on their homepage there, right in the center, you can choose a distribution from the drop-down list, hit refresh, and it will give you their summary of the latest news for that distribution. And that's where I found a good deal of information on ClearOS the first time I was looking at it. And it looks like Dave Loper, who's probably the developer behind ClearOS, has announced the first alpha release of ClearOS 6.1. Mm-hmm. And it is a small distribution for network and gateway servers, according to the summary identified here. So hopefully that's gives you enough information, 305 Tech, to get at least started with either determining that ClearOS is something you want to give a try, or maybe Inet Ken's suggestion might be a better start to get you going, especially since in one of your other posts you say that your friend is really not wanting to pay much money or maybe even any money. Mm. And Linux is a great way to get something going. And quite frankly, a lot of the web servers that run the internet are running Linux servers. So you're in good company there.
Well, there you go. I hope that answered your question. But he also had a second question.
Okay, let's go for that.
From 305 Tech again. Larry, my same friend wants to try Joomla, but I tried setting up on SME and couldn't figure it out. Do you know of any distros that come with Joomla already packaged and come ready to run a content management system?
Right. And so that is what Joomla is a content management system. And the answer is no, I don't. I don't know of any.
What exactly is a content management system?
Okay, well, think of a content management system as something like Wikipedia would be a wiki that would be, you know, managing your content. It's kind of the front end of your database of information on the web. And so you could have a content management system that runs your blog, that runs your wiki, that runs your customer relationship management system for a business with salespeople. So that's kind of what it is.
Okay. So an answer to him is, to finish it up, do you know any distros that come with Joomla already packaged?
Nope, and I'm sure somebody in the chat room is going to have a better answer than that.
Okay, then. All right. Well, let's move on to the back to our emails here, and let's This one is from
Dog Flap.
P-H-L-A-P. Dog Flap. I have to look at that, really. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Obviously a screen name or some very big sense of humor there. Yeah,
exactly.
He's English.
I'm going to name my child Dog Flap. No, I don't think so.
Okay. I don't know. Anyway. Dog Flap actually is a regular listener to the Going Linux podcast, and he's actually providing in his email a correction to some feedback on Ubuntu Linux's new Unity interface that I provided some misdirection on. And as the guy pointed out, Larry, to the Samsung site for his CX3175 printer driver, I feel I should pick you up for calling this proprietary. It is open source. It was released under a BSD license. A text file on their site encourages the modification of their source code, which is one of the definitions of open source software. I am being such a pedant because it is so rare for a big corporations, okay, exceptions may include Google, IBM, and HP, do the right thing by open source, by providing open source, that we should not label one of their contributors as proprietary when it is clearly not. I love your show and I always learn from it. For example, I know I'm now read it correctly, Larry. For example, now I know what the terms mirroring and extended mean regarding dual monitors. And I hear our break music coming up, so maybe we can finish this up after.
Okay, we will do that, and we'll see what Dog Flap, I love that, has to say. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. We're reading your emails to Larry Bushy. It's our All Linux show tonight. We'll continue on with more right after these words. And welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK. We are doing our All Linux show tonight. Larry Bushy continues on with us here on the Computer America program, and we were reading Dog Flap's email. I just love the name, yes. And why don't you pick it up where you left off, Larry?
Sure. So Dog Flap just called me to task for calling the Linux driver provided by Samsung as proprietary when, in fact, it is indeed open source. And thanks to Samsung for supporting open source software. So Dog Flap continues, and I'll backtrack just a little bit to maintain the context here. I love your show, and I always learn from it. For example, now I know that what the terms mirroring and extended mean regarding dual monitors. Currently, I run Mythbuntu 11.04, another variant of Ubuntu. Get the idea, it's pretty popular, with the XFCE desktop. I did try Ubuntu 11.04 on a spare computer for a few hours, just long enough to find the terminal and how to shut the computer down. If Unity was the only available interface for Linux, I would use it. I applaud Mark Shuttleworth and his merry men for providing yet another alternative. Some people, not you guys, have become very upset about this change. They should realize that this is what freedom is about. No one holds a gun to our heads to use this. These large-scale experiments need to be tried for Linux to advance. Now I'm happy with XFCE. Best regards, Dog Flap.
There you go. Okay.
So, Ben, did that raise any questions in your mind?
Apparently, Ubuntu is like, you know, all these variations of it. So it must be like a really important product. Ask your questions.
Well, just by way of explanation, Ubuntu is probably the distribution that put Linux on the current modern distribution or modern operating system map. It was designed for the new user. It was designed very easy to use, much like the Mac is very easy to use. And in fact, there are a lot of similarities between the former incarnation of Ubuntu and Mac OS X interface. And as a result, there are a lot of variants of Ubuntu that sprang up with different developers' interests in mind. And of course, users being users, some people like one flavor version flavor over another. And one thing that you may have picked up on is Ubuntu made a radical change in their user interface lately that has some people liking it and some people not. And that Unity interface actually is designed, from my perspective, to be something that you would want to run on a tablet computer as opposed to a desktop computer with a keyboard or even a laptop. Although it runs just fine on a laptop or a desktop, it's really designed for use with your finger on a touchscreen. And many people who were using Ubuntu almost religiously because it was very easy to use and very popular have decided, including myself, to switch to something else. And I've not switched because of the user interface, but because some of the changes that they made in this experimental change caused some applications that I run that I use to record the podcast to crash. And so I'm just moving over to Linux Mint until Ubuntu gets her act together, and that'll, you know, be a release or two, and then I'll be back. So that's kind of where we're at.
Actually, you know, last three emails have been about Unity. What exactly did they do that was so radical? I mean, did they, you know, change the square icons to round icons? What did they do?
Not quite. So you took a look at the Linux Mint website. If you go to Ubuntu, that's ubuntu.com, you'll see the Ubuntu website. Take a look at the screenshots, and you'll see that it looks like a series of buttons down the left-hand side, which are perfect for pressing with your finger. And one of the things that they've done is they've determined that the best way to use this interface is to use every application full screen as opposed to windowed. And so it tends to be running from that perspective. You can still window your windows and make them smaller, but it's really designed to use your applications full screen. And so for people who are in chat rooms while they're doing work, while they're, you know, doing other things, it's invaluable to have window, you know, have your windows show up as separate movable objects on your screen. The other thing they've done is they've moved what normally you would have a menu bar on the top of each window for each application, like your word processor menu would be on the word processor menu. They've moved it to a universal menu bar at the top, just like a Mac. So there's some consternation about that as well. Many people like it. Many people love it, prefer it over your traditional Windows-type user interface. But many people find that uncomfortable coming from Windows. So, you know, there's a little difference of opinion there. And as our previous emailer, Dogflap, said, that's what freedom's all about, and lots of choice in the Linux world. If you don't like what's there, try something else, and you'll probably find something you like.
Hey, Larry, are we going to have time to read Mike's? I think we only have like about 3 minutes. Why don't we try to get Mike's email?
Okay, let's read through Mike's and see where we go from there. Okay. Mike is a new listener and wrote, I just discovered your site. Very cool. I was listening to your archived Going Linux episode 121, in which you rant about Target's coupon printing site. Chat room, shut up. I know I've talked about this before. I've run into this exact problem recently when my wife asked me to print coupons from Target.com. I was wondering, have you ever heard anything more from them?
So they're not compatible with Linux? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right.
How do they do that? They go out of their way to do that? I mean,
You know, it's not that. The coupon printing software is designed to use ActiveX controls or to use Windows-based tools. And so
it won't work on a Mac even?
It just, well, some of them work on a Mac, but some of them are incompatible with Mac as well. So I wrote to Target and asked them, you know, what are you going to do about it? And haven't heard a word back, quite frankly. How are we doing on time here? We got a few minutes.
Yeah, we do.
So continuing on, Mike writes, also, you were asking why they require a plug-in to print print coupons. Well, the reason behind it is relatively sound, in my opinion. They want to limit the number of coupons that are printed for each item. So they run a plugin that tracks the coupons you print so that it keeps you from mass printing and distributing their coupons. Now, realistically, anyone could use a PDF printer to create a PDF of the coupons and print as many copies as they like. But anyways, I tried a number of things to try and print these coupons. One, using a user agent to switch the plugin in Linux Firefox to pretend it's pretend I'm using Internet Explorer 8. Of course, it expects me to download a Windows executable plugin, not compatible with Linux. I've tried using Windows Firefox in Wine. The plugin crashes. Using VirtualBox to install in a Windows XP session, I couldn't get it to recognize my network printer for some reason, probably a configuration issue on my part. And item four, again, I tried using a user agent switcher plugin in Linux Firefox to pretend I'm using Safari on Mac OS X. This time, it did something rather interesting. It sent me to a page asking me to accept their coupon printing terms. After accepting, it sent me to another page and a Java applet. This applet seems to sort of work. I can even get it to print to the point where it says my coupons have been successfully printed. However, nothing is ever sent to my printer.
Poor guy, really.
He says, I think this last one is intriguing. I'm not sure where the disconnect is. I'm not able to view the Java applet, or even if I am, I don't know enough about Java to know what needs to be fixed. What are your thoughts on this? Thanks, Mike. Yeah. Well, Mike, I don't know about the Mac side of things, but I think your best bet is to use that virtual machine, that virtual box, Windows XP, and get your network printer working. That will work. I think it probably is a configuration issue.
Yeah. And we're out of time, man, I'll tell you.
There we go. So we crammed it in.
We squeezed it in. Listen, Larry, always a pleasure having you here on the show. We look forward to seeing you next month. We'll figure out what the topic's going to be. It's the Going Linux podcast. You can find the link to it right on our website at computeramerica.com on our links page. Thanks again, Larry, for being here tonight. Always a pleasure. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Computer Mechanics is going to be joining us. Woody Pfeiffer. This is a guy who has a computer repair business. He's going to talk about fun stories and things that's happened to him. We're going to talk about computer repair, answer computer questions. It's all about Wednesday Madness, and that's what we're going to do tomorrow night. And hopefully you'll be there with it. It's going to be a fun show. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. Have a great evening. We will see you tomorrow night.
What's a floppy?
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.